This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Scientists have created complex models that project an extreme climate shift. And these models reach down into deforestation, agricultural impacts, changes to the oceans, ice worlds, and atmosphere. But now we know humans are the driving force in a new geologic age called the Anthropocene. Scientific climate models have the physics and the chemistry, but so far they lack the most difficult thing: how humans will further twist and tilt natural systems. A paper published in the National Science Review in December 2016 addresses that. This work from a team of 20 authors deals with overshoot, the trajectory of collapse, and the way growing inequality of wealth can break our system down. I've reached the lead author, Dr. Safa Modashari. He's a systems scientist at the University of Maryland. Safa Modashari, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
It's great to be with you. Thanks, Alex.
This new work from your team, it's deep and it's long, but before we get there, I'd like to build a base from an earlier paper you published in 2014 with Jorge Ribas and Irene Calne. And the title is Human and Nature Dynamics, Modeling Inequality and the Use of Resources in the Collapse or Sustainability of Societies. I've just talked with Dr. Cameron Petrie about the downfall of the Indus civilization a few thousand years ago. In the same program, Dr. Takeshi Inamata told us about the collapse of the Mayan society. So it does happen. Are serious people concerned about the possibility of collapse in our own civilization?
That's an interesting question, Alex. I work on dynamical systems, a field devoted to studying the properties and evolution of systems with interconnected components and variables. Collapse is characterized by fast reduction in one or many variables in that system. It's a possibility in almost any dynamic system, given certain structures and parameter values. And the human system in a specific geographical region, together with its natural resources, it's a dynamic system. And therefore, it's not an exception from such possibility.
Well, now, in your 2014 paper, in the abstract, we find, quote, "We build a human population dynamics model by adding accumulated wealth and economic inequality to a predator-prey model of humans and nature." And I'm thinking these days a few billionaires are piling up the wealth while the middle class almost evaporates and poverty expands, even in developed countries. Has our society developed a class of predators and prey comparable to nature?
Right. Many people wonder about that and ask us about this issue. So within the framework of the Handy model, we consider the depletion of natural resources as a predation mechanism, similar to what was done in the theoretical model of predator-prey in biology. The stock of nature is the prey, and the stock of human population plays the role of the predator. Nonetheless, inequality by itself is included as a central element in the Handy model, in the sense that the elites, they control the stock of wealth, which allows them to live off of what the masses produce. And this gives elites a buffer in the event of a collapse. It postpones their collapse for a few years or a few decades, but it cannot save them forever.
I find that very interesting, that humans are really the predators here and the prey is nature itself. I hadn't really thought of it that way, but it sounds true. So many biologists have worked out the carrying capacity for everything from wolves to plankton, but they're leaving something out, you say?
Yes, this is an important question, and it's a topic that we plan to write a more comprehensive paper about in the future. From the traditional point of view of biology or ecology, carrying capacity is a parameter, often a constant, that's determined a priori for the system. But we show that for the human system, carrying capacity is a more complex dynamic variable that's determined by the structure and the properties of the system. It's not something that we can prescribe in our models before we run them. It results from simulation of the model. And most importantly, we show that carrying capacity can change and can evolve over time as a result of policy choices and decisions, particularly decisions we make about natural resource management.
You know, something that you're saying here is stimulating a memory in me, and I can't pinpoint it, but it was about systems and the way seemingly stable systems can run for a long time, and then rather than decline, they just fell apart. Is that something that you've encountered in your model runs?
Yes. This is a very good point, actually. This brings up the issue, you know, we show that in our handy paper. This was one of the features of the paper that made it very attractive to our academic colleagues and to the academic community and also to the public. So we showed there are two different trajectories or routes to a collapse. So one is overexploitation of nature, which we call type N collapses in our handy paper, which is a typical case of collapses, and people have known about that before. But then we show a different route to a collapse, where initially a system seems apparently on a steady state path, and the system is otherwise sustainable. But then we introduce a large level of inequality into the system, and after that we see that the system moves towards a collapse. So, you know, this is what we call the type L, or collapse due to overexploitation of labor. L stands for labor. And this is definitely something that we have seen in historical cases. For example, the collapse of the Maya civilization represents this mechanism fairly well.
I wonder, too, if the collapse of the Soviet Union wouldn't come under that, in the sense that people weren't getting a lot from the government that demanded everything of them, and people stopped believing in the system. There was a collapse of belief.
That's a slightly different. That's a slightly different than what we discuss, but it could be understood beyond the framework that we proposed in the handy model.
All right. Well, let's move forward to your new paper of 2016. Why did your team of 20 experts decide on this pursuit?
So current models that are used to guide important policies nationally and internationally, such as the integrated assessment models or the models used for the IPCC reports, they make projections of the climate and the rest of the Earth system variables and components based on long-term demographic and economic forecasts that are done independently. But in reality, all of these key human system components are connected with two-way feedbacks to natural components. So we propose the modeling community to shift toward a new paradigm of modeling, which is including all of these human system variables as dynamic variables in the model with bidirectional feedbacks to the Earth system components, as it is happening in the real system, in the real world. And we were really fortunate to work with a team of distinguished scientists whose expertise and background was in multiple different aspects of both the Earth system and the human system. And they helped us really put together this framework and make sure we consider different aspects that are critical in developing such a framework.
I think that's really important what you've just said, and it's a huge topic. We're going to talk more about it as we continue this interview with Safa Modashari. So Owen Gaffney and Will Steffens were on our program. They published their equation for the operation of humans and nature in the Anthropocene, and on Radio EcoShock, Owen talked about the great acceleration seen in almost every trend of human action since 1950. Does that figure in your paper?
Absolutely. So if you look at the first figure in our paper, figure number one, we have a plot that shows the development and the trajectory of the human population and human consumption per capita since 2,000 years ago up until today. And that shows, you know, two points, basically from the beginning of industrial civilization, 1750, and then from 1950, beginning of the Green Revolution, we have two rapid periods of growth in both of these variables. And you have to remember that our total impact on the planet is the product, is the multiplication of these two. So we have two extremely rapidly growing factors, and the multiplication, the product of the two, is our total impact on the planet, which we calculate actually in that figure in the paper. And we show that since 1950 onward, every 17 years, once every 17 years, the total impact has doubled. This is shockingly rapid.
Well, in this program, we talk a lot about how feedbacks in climate change could destabilize the human system and everything from agriculture to more deaths from heat and flooding. But what about the feedbacks you're talking about that humans impose on the natural system? Is there an important interaction in all this?
That's an excellent question, Alex. So we devoted a major portion of the paper to discussing these feedbacks in both directions. So most of the literature, academic literature, and most what people know about are the impacts that the human system has on the planet. You know, the impact on the climate, impact on oceans, on land, and so on and so forth. But we look at also there are feedbacks, impacts of the Earth system on the human system, on the society. And we discuss that, you know, we discuss this in details in the paper.
These Earth system models, they're huge models running on multiple computers and great big computing centers, and they're used by groups like the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and many other institutions, and that's what advises governments when they do a deal like the Paris Agreement. From what you're saying, it sounds like these models are missing an essential part of the picture. Maybe they're way off on what's going to happen.
Yes, that's a critical point, and that's the central message of our paper. So these models and these people who run these models, they are very talented and brilliant people, and these models are very detailed and complicated models, and they've accomplished a lot. But the key factor is that we need to have those feedbacks, the bidirectional feedbacks between the human elements and the Earth system, the natural elements, in order to get realistic projections of the future. There are many scenarios, many situations that we can miss, important signals indeed, that we can miss if we don't include these feedbacks. And we really hope that these institutions and these large organizations that run these models and already have the capacity and the talent and the tools necessary to implement such models actually take our proposed paradigm and implement it their own models.
Safa, I have to sympathize, though, with climate scientists, especially under pressure of denial coming out of the Trump administration. Earth scientists are comfortable modeling ice melt and ocean currents. Those are physical events with solid numbers. Is it fair to ask them to add in the rapidly changing human economy as well?
Right. That's, again, another one of the central points of the paper. And this question is raised a lot. We are arguing in the paper that because humans have become the major drivers of the changes in the natural systems and the Earth system, understanding long-term trajectory of natural system can no longer be done accurately without including these effects from the human system. So we must model the human system as well. We have to do it. Of course, you know, this is not a trivial task. This is not obvious, and it's stepping out of the comfort zone of the natural scientists or Earth system scientists, but it's something that has to be done, and we have to start as soon as possible. It's a learning curve, but the more we delay it, the more dangers we might be facing.
Well, let's say we don't take your advice. We stick to basic science and leave the hot political issues like fair distribution of wealth right out of the models. What happens?
Yeah, this is precisely the issue of the feedback. We cannot ignore these feedbacks anymore and just assume that everything will be fine, which is the assumption of independent projections. We have to have those variables in the model, and we have to think about them as coupled with the rest of the system.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex, and my guest is Dr. Safa Modashari from the University of Maryland. We're talking about the interaction of human systems with climate and a strained ecosphere. Safa, could you give us an example of the sort of human shift that could do serious damage to an Earth system model if it's not included?
Yes. Obvious example is this explosive growth of human population and the massive use of fossil fuels, what we have already seen since 1950. And this is what we show in the first graph of the paper. And that's an obvious example. There are many other examples. There are many other projections that can change the per capita consumptions and change in the standard of living and so on and so forth. But the obvious example is what has happened in the history in the recent past.
Well, I want to tell you, Dr. Timothy Garrett from the University of Utah created an equation for the relationship of wealth to emissions. He told us the only serious reduction of emissions in any country happened when the Soviet Union collapsed. Garrett's formula suggests only a global crash of our current economy could save us from extreme climate change. What are your thoughts on this, Safa?
I am an optimist, and in theory, I do not agree with this thesis that there's no way to prevent catastrophic climate change unless there's a global massive crash of the current world or current economy. We already have, you know, given our current technologies and other means, we already have all the means necessary to avoid catastrophic environmental change. The important question, the important issue is that whether we would widely adopt these technologies and solutions. And the second important thing is that whether we do it in time. We can't wait until it's too late. We have to do it as soon as possible. The sooner, the better. And this is certainly doable. But, you know, of course, if we keep doing business as usual, we don't make changes that are necessary, then the economy and the human system will automatically crash, at least in certain regions.
Is it possible this civilization has already begun a process of collapse, but we just don't know it yet?
We have to be careful about the boundary of the system when we talk about collapses. Do we mean collapse in a city, in a province, in a country, or in a larger region like a Middle East, or the collapse of the whole world? We have to always draw the boundary. Of course, there are several examples of current collapses, you know, countries that have collapsed. Most important one, most famous one is Syria, but there are several others like Somalia, Yemen, Congo, Sudan, and many other failed states.
Yes, I'd add Venezuela to that list, or at least it's in the process of collapsing, it appears, at this time. We talked about the billionaires who control most of the world's wealth, and there are billions of people who continue in abject poverty. Is it fair to say that wealth inequality is also an environmental issue now?
Absolutely. Yes, that's a great point, Alex, and this is absolutely true. We discuss in the paper, and we show, even like the earlier paper, that it's not just, you know, one number about, you know, how much, you know, what's the average, what's the number. It's the distribution of wealth and consumption and emissions that matters. And the more skewed this distribution is, the larger the inequality, the impact, the total emissions, the total consumption, and the total impact on the planet is higher. So, yes, definitely this is a key issue.
I don't think most environmentalists realize that yet, although they may be on board with the issue of wealth inequality. Can you locate that same wealth inequality as a driver of collapse in any earlier human civilization?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, this was one of the main points of our handy paper that we discussed. There was, for example, the Mayan collapse, which was a case of type L collapse, which was a result of high levels of inequality, and also the collapse of the Roman empires and many others that happened certainly because of high rates of inequality.
Is there a realistic way to fix it, to right the economic injustice?
Absolutely. I mean, we don't discuss those. We're not experts on how to do this, and so we don't discuss those in the papers. But there are definitely ways, and there are experts who do that, who discuss, you know, different ways that are possible. But we show that if we do reduce this level of inequality, then we can bring the system into a steady state and a sustainable state.
Interesting. So where do the big computer models of Earth systems get their information now on demographics and economics, and what's wrong with that way of doing things?
Great question. So IAM's integrated assessment models usually use the projections by international organizations such as the United Nations for demographic projections and the World Bank for economic projections and similar other projections. The problem is that many non-trivial solutions, many non-trivial trajectories of the whole system cannot be derived from these exogenous projections. Those variables like population or consumption inequality can go only one way in this way of doing the models, in this like one-way coupled models, which is the projected way. You project it, so that's the only way that it can evolve over time. There's no other way. But in reality, those variables can evolve in many different ways and many non-trivial, surprising trajectories and solutions can emerge.
And you talk about human system models. I'm dubious that's possible with billions of quasi-intelligent and randomly creative or destructive beings. Who has those models and how good are they?
This is probably the most common doubt people have with our proposed framework. So you're absolutely right. We cannot model human choices and predict what people will do, at least, you know, at this time and with the current stage of models of human cognition and decision-making. And because of that, we don't discuss it in the paper. Rather, we take policies as choices, as knobs that you can tweak, and you can, based on those choices, based on those policies, you can get different trajectories and different outcomes in the future.
Safa, have you found resistance among Earth scientists to incorporating the work on human systems?
Fortunately, most Earth scientists and natural scientists that we have collaborated or communicated with agree with our thesis about coupling these systems, Earth and human systems, with feedbacks. Maybe not all of them would like to be actively involved in the implementation process because this would be, you know, out of their comfort zone. But few disagree with the importance of including these feedbacks in the systems. And we received, you know, massive support from our peers and our academic colleagues in terms of the future direction of the modeling community.
I've been thinking about your paper over a few days, and if I were a politician supported by fundraising from rich people and corporations, the tone of your team's paper is almost revolutionary. I mean, economic justice is not on the agenda right now. We're not hearing about it in the TV news. It's something for lefties maybe or smaller governments in South America to talk about. But again, just so we don't miss it in the political fog, what happens if we ignore what is happening with wealth distribution?
You're right. You're right. The issue of inequality does not seem to be on the agenda for the politicians. And I wouldn't agree that it's not for common people. You know, people can see the dangers from these high levels of inequality, and we need to include them. So we should, and we should certainly in the future and currently discuss more inequality and its implications, particularly from a purely scientific point of view, you know, from a point of view of what happens if these levels of inequality increase, what happens to the system, to both, you know, the human system and the natural system.
Is anybody already working to combine these human systems to the integrated assessment models that are used to advise governments and corporations?
I don't know personally any group or institution that's currently providing policy advice using two-way coupled models. So that's why we're proposing that we need to have those, and we hope that the institutions that are currently using one-way coupled models, they move toward this new paradigm of modeling that we propose.
And what will you be researching next?
So a couple of things. So one of the things, important things that we are working on right now is the natural follow-up to the current paper. So in the current paper, we showed basically a framework. We proposed a framework to couple the Earth system and human system. But we have actually developed also an example of this model. It's a coupled human climate water model, and we have validated it with the past observations. It runs for the region of Phoenix in Arizona, and we are preparing a manuscript based on that for submission to a scientific journal. And following that, we are also hoping to write, you know, as I discussed earlier, we're hoping to write an introduction to carrying capacity, to the concept of carrying capacity from the point of view of dynamic systems, and introducing carrying capacity as a dynamic variable for human systems.
Is there anything else you would like to tell our listeners?
Two points that I always like to raise when I discuss my work. One thing is that always preventing catastrophes is much cheaper and much easier done before they occur compared to fixing the results and consequences of catastrophes. That's why we try to develop these models. We try to discuss these issues before they happen and propose solutions that are relatively easy to implement, cheap to implement, and they can have the best, it's the win-win situation for everyone. So that's one point. And the second point is that I think the key for successfully doing this, for successfully making these right decisions before, you know, catastrophes happen, is education. Is education at its widest definition, both formal education, as it's done, you know, in school and colleges, and also education through media. That's exactly why we need, you know, many great journalists like yourself to communicate, you know, science and evidence unbiased to the public and inform them. And because of that, I really like to congratulate you for your great work and thank you for talking with me about this.
Well, I appreciate that. We've been talking about a big new paper from a team of 20 scientists. The title is Modeling Sustainability, Population, Inequality, Consumption, and Bidirectional Coupling of the Earth and Human Systems. It's a big title, but I think it's kind of revolutionary, and that's why I'm glad we had this chance to talk about it. It was published in the National Science Review in December 11th, 2016. You can find links to the science discussed in this program in my show blog at ecoshock.info. Our guest is Dr. Safa Modashari, the system scientist from the University of Maryland. Safa, thank you so much for your help.
Thank you very much, Alex.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
I'm Alex. Thank you for listening, and please join me again next week for Radio EcoShock.